Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening for this special podcast that we're doing today on an early Monday evening. This is Carl from Carl's Cavern, and we also have our wondrous tech producer extraordinaire, and that would be Doc. Say hello, Doc.
Good afternoon, evening, everybody, on a Monday. So there.
Okay, well, today we're going to be talking to Joe Lansdale. He does know to call in, and he's not here yet. So I thought what we do right now to mark a little bit of time is go through what we're planning for the week. So, Doc, you've got two things set up here.
Yes,
for
I
tomorrow
do. Actually,
and-
they're yes, they're one day after another. For tomorrow, Tuesday, we have the Sunday show that was supposed to happen, but we both, myself and Carl, were sick, and Danae was busy, so unfortunately we didn't have a show. Tomorrow, our show, we're actually going to be recording it at 1 p.m. in the afternoon, so the link will be active from 1 p.m., so everybody can take a look at it whenever they want to. And we're going to be, it's a combination show. It's going to be pretty big, actually. The Sludge Pit, also the Toxic Cinema, and Carl's Cavern all rolled up into one here. And what we're going to be talking about is humor in print, like the Far Side Comics, Calvin and Hobbes,
Mad Magazine,
some of the Playboy comics. That type of thing. Oh, we have a phone call. Let me bring that in. Hello, good evening.
Hello, it's Joe.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I can't complain. Doesn't help. Nobody listens anyway. You should know by now.
Yeah, no, I do know.
So we want to welcome Joe Lansdale to the podcast. Joe, thanks so much for taking some time and joining us today. The reason, of course, you've got a lot going on.
Oh, yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Joe, why don't you just give them a little background bio?
Oh, wow. Well, I've been doing I've been doing it for about 45 years. I've written nearly 50 novels, probably 400 short pieces, meaning short stories and essays and nonfiction. I've written scripts and written for Batman the Animated Series and Superman the Animated Series, lots of comics like Jonah Hex and The Lone Ranger, and I wrote, a Batman novel. I've written a lot of mostly novels of my own, Happen Leonard series, which was a TV series on Sundance for 3 seasons, and filmed Cold in July, Bubba Hotep, Incident on Off of Mountain Road, on Masters of Horror. Good grief, there's a lot of stuff.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You've got stuff coming up here. One of the reasons you're here is to sort of trumpet what you're doing now. So you got something coming up that you're going to be working with Greg Nicotero?
That's right. That's Creepshow. It's actually a story written by me, my daughter Casey, and my son Keith. And we're providing the story, and a good friend of mine, Matt Vang, did the script for it. So that's coming up.
Okay. Do you want to give us a little bit about what the story's about?
I don't want to give too much away, but I will say this, because this much they've sort of offered, is that, let's just put it, that is a very creepy, weird scarecrow story called The Companion. And from the little bits that I've seen that they've advertised, it looks like it's going to be pretty special.
Good. Good.
And I know
good.
They have a Stephen King story, a Joe Hill, and I'm not sure all who else will have stories. I think it's 6 episodes, and then of course it's
that's what I
news
understand.
And, you know, something else. Yeah, I kind of like that short series. Maybe, you know, I can't help but wish it was a little bit longer, because I love those kinds of stories. So, and so, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh yeah, so are we. And I also hear you got a comic book coming out.
Well, I have the collected issues of Bubba Hotep and the Cosmic Bloodsuckers, and there's a comic being done based on the general character Bubba from Bubba Hotep, which is the Sebastian Half Elvis character, and it's a crossover with the Evil Dead. So those comics are forthcoming.
Nice. That sounds awesome.
Well, I hope it is. I've read the script for the Evil Dead. I really like it. I thought that the Bubba and the Cosmic Bloodsuckers turned out great, and the collected issues just started coming out. And I have a new novel coming out next month from Little Brown Mulholland called The Elephant of Surprise. It's a Hap and Leonard novel.
So that brings me up to something I wanted to talk to you about, because
sure.
I have to give you credit that you are so self-confident you'll do such a terrible pun as a as a title. And trust me, you're talking to someone who's a punster myself. You know,
yeah.
I give you credit for that.
Well, you know, I'm not normally a punster, but I just could not resist that one, you know. And I seem to have been on an animal roll for titles. I had Rusty Puppy, I had Jackrabbit Smile, and The Elephant of Surprise.
Yeah, I finally got a chance to see the first season of Hap and Leonard. And I'll tell you, I thought they did a really good job with that series.
Yeah, me too. All three seasons are good. I'm partial to the first season because it was done not far from here, across the border in Louisiana, and I spent a lot of time on set. But all three, you know, seasons are really, really good. I thought that they portrayed the world that I knew, the world I also created in conjunction with it, and the characters that I had invented. I thought that they were really, you know, pretty much spot on.
Well, you know, the thing is, you've done a you know, you've created a universe with these characters, and they're so lived in, and that's the one thing I really like both about the novels and they were able to transfer it to the series, is that, you know, these are real characters, and the bond between these two, you know, Hap and Leonard. One being, of course, a liberal draft dodger, and the other one a black Republican.
Well, not a draft dodger. We're gonna make that clear. He was one of those guys who he let himself be drafted and refused to go and ended up in prison. So he didn't dodge at all.
Okay, that's right. Sorry, my bad. Bad Carl. you know, it's the characters. And the other thing, too, I got a chance to see Cold in July, finally. And from what I understand, the Don Johnson character in there is also in this universe. And I got to say something.
Yeah.
The intro of that character in that film is just friggin' perfect.
It is good. Yeah, it is good. He first made his appearance in that particular novel that film is based on, Cold in July, and then he pops up in two or three of the Hap and Leonard novels. I see Bad Chili, I believe, is when he first pops up in Hap and Leonard novels. He's also in a couple of others, and probably in a big way in Bad Chili, and a bigger way in Honky Tonk Samurai. And so, you know, he's around. He's certainly been there in different episodes.
Yeah. So Doc, I thought I'd kick it over to you because I know you have a great love of the comic books and Batman and that. You have any questions for Joe on that end?
Well, actually, I really would like to compliment you on your episodes.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. I grew up in the 90s. I was actually in my teens in the 90s. And I grew up watching Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series, and the new Batman Adventures. Your episodes were awesome. And I was,
well,
I just,
thank you.
The writing on, you're so welcome. The writing on them is very complex. And it was just very enjoyable.
Thank you. I did one of the Superman, but I did a plot line. Somebody else wrote the script. It was a Bizarro episode.
Awesome. Very awesome.
Yeah. Well, Batman was one of those characters that I grew up with. And in the 50s, when I was just, 4 or 5 years old, I started reading comics. And then, of course, I gradually discovered Batman and the whole DC universe. And Batman was always my favorite. I loved him. And I thought, oh, if I grow up, I want to write comics and I want a chance to, deal with Batman. And though I never wrote Batman comics, I did end up doing quite a bit of comics, and I ended up writing Batman for the animated series. And I wrote a novel called Captured by the Engines, E-N-G-I-N-E-S, for Warner when they had the rights to the Batman novels. And that was in that era about when, we had the Batman film with Michael Keaton. And I also wrote a couple of Batman novellas, and I wrote a Batman children's book. So I got to experience that, childhood dream come true. I got to experience quite a few of them. Like, I got to finish the Tarzan novel that Edgar Rice Burroughs left unfinished, and of course, my own work. So I've had a really, in my view, a sterling career, because I've gotten to do what I've wanted to do, and I pretty much just kind of pursued what I was interested in, and not necessarily been driven by what, is expected by me in publishing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, go ahead, Doc. Sorry.
That's okay. And this is way back in 2011. Way back, yeah. Your 30 Days of Night.
Oh, yeah.
Comic. So good.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm very, very impressed by it. And sorry, I'm like fanboying all over the place. I usually don't do that.
That's all right. I'll need them.
That's not true, but I like your writing style is very good. I absolutely love your humor. You actually put a little bit of humor into things that, like the dire situation that, like in the 30 Days of Night, there's a slight little bit of humor that makes, like, ooh, this is good.
Yeah, so very, that's important to me. Yeah, there was a writer, Robert Bloch, who wrote Psycho, and he wrote a lot of short stories, and he scripted a lot of films and TV too, and he was a big influence on me on the horror humor sort of side, and so was Mark Twain. Wasn't necessarily horror and humor, but he would sort of take a dire situation and write it in a humorous way, and so I always felt that had an impact that very much. Pleased me, so it kind of found its way into my work as I matured and began to write, for a living. So, which was when I was 21, I sold my first stuff, and by the time I was 29, I was full-time.
Yeah, I got to say something about Robert Bloch. I'm just a little younger than you, Joe, and I grew up in the early 60s reading him and noticed that also. I've always thought that would, to do it right, to put humor and horror together, it's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's not. It's harder than it seems. I do think perhaps some people have a little bit more inclination to that, but I learned so much from Robert Bloch. He was probably, for me, when I was growing up, I read everybody, and I read, of course, the classics like Poe and Ambrose Bierce and, Algernon Blackwood and, Macon, you name it. But Bloch, for me, was probably the most important horror writer, especially as a short story writer, that I read, growing up. And something about what he did just really clicked with me. And I was a big fan. I got to meet him. I actually got to buy a story from him with my friend Rick Claw that we adapted into a comic called The Hellbound Train. And then years later, my brother and I got to adapt The Hellbound Train ourselves for IDW. And we did two Bloch stories. We did Yours Truly, Jack the Ripper, and we did The Hellbound Train. I wish we'd have gotten a chance to do more of them,
Well, maybe you'll get a chance to do that, I mean,
well, it could happen.
His work is still viable as far as a horror writer. I mean, certainly there's a number of stories you could adapt.
Oh yeah. I did a Lovecraft, the Dunwich Horror for IDW, and I've done a lot of comics, and very little in what I call the superhero genre, although I actually, you know, like it. But primarily it's been things like Jonah Hex, more the outlier comics. My friend Tim Truman, who is just a fantastic artist, of course, he and I did the Jonah Hex comics in the 90s for DC for when they had a Vertigo line, which was more adult. I think that line is gone now. But we enjoyed doing those.
Vertigo just actually got reinvigorated. Having troubles. They had to cancel a couple of things.
It died completely for a while, and then it came back, and you know, and then of course you're telling me now about this incarnation, still struggling along. I hope it makes it.
So do I. I always liked the Vertigo line a lot. Now, I need to bring something up because I need to know this. I was checking out your IMDb, and you wrote an episode of Dennis Leary's comedy, The Job. I want to know which
one. No. I never wrote anything for Dennis Leary. There's a short story of mine called The Job that was filmed in a little short thing but has nothing to do with Dennis Leary.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I couldn't find any information. I thought maybe
is that what it says on the thing?
It says The Job. It doesn't connect to Leary, but it doesn't connect to anything.
Yeah,
so
no, it's a really short. It's a short story of mine. It was made into a short film. I think it was the early 90s. It's been a while. I don't honestly remember, but it was made into a short film, and it won some little prize at some film festival stuff, you know, but it was maybe 20 minutes long, and the short story is just a few pages. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as far as you, as you're looking at your work and so on and so forth, what, you know, if somebody's looking for something to read, what differentiates you from other writers, you know, or what do you think is your strongest point to come through in the end?
Well, you know, I mean, that's hard to say, but I think that I have a voice and an attitude, and I think that the place where I come from, East Texas, gives my work a sort of identification that makes it different in attitude and tone. So, and I'm variable. I mean, you know, I've written things from historicals, I've written horror, I've written crime, I've written science fiction, fantasy, and mystery, and all kinds of things, nonfiction, nonfiction articles, and of course, you know, I've written the comics and the scripts and even plays. So I think variety would be one thing, and second of all would be a sort of angle and attitude that's identifiable. Even when the stories are somewhat different, there's something identifiable about what I do. And that's, you know, there's more people now working in that tradition than when I started, because there weren't many people writing from the Southern point of view in genre fiction. There were some, but in what I was doing was a little unique. Now there are many more, some of them influenced by me, some of them just that the opportunities, you know, were there for them that maybe weren't there when I first started. So I think that identifiably East Texan is one of them. A sort of satire that's in my work. You know, I have a love-hate relationship with where I'm from, and I satirize the things that I think deserve it, and, you know, I love the things that I think deserve that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and seeing the adaptations and also reading some of your stories, the thing I love is, you know, the humor that comes through. And the humor is natural. You know, I mean, even when I'm talking about Godzilla on the 12-step program, there's just something wonderfully real about that comes through in your writing.
Well, you know, I always looked at, but that was, of course, I grew up on Godzilla, like a lot of people my age and in my age group. And then, of course, there's certainly those who saw them on TV or video. But, you know, I always thought those were great fun. And when I got older, of course, I looked at them. I thought, okay, these were much more, they were much better when I was younger. But there's still something about them that I love. And I also thought that it might be interesting to approach the story from this whole 12-step idea for monsters. And so that's how that story came about. And it's one, you know, it's one of those stories that's been really popular. In fact, there's a new collection of my work that was done in limited form and really nice edition called Cosmic Interruptions, in which that story has once again been printed. And I couldn't tell you how many times that story's been picked up, or there was even a Mexican puppet show version of it.
Okay, excuse me, gentlemen, we have a caller. We have a caller.
Okay.
We have a caller.
Okay.
Let me get him in the system here. Hello, caller. F5.
Hello. This is me.
Uh-oh, it's Mike. It's the house. He's in the house.
Well, I couldn't pass this up. I couldn't pass this opportunity up to talk to a legend, I'm telling you. So.
Well, I'm here too, but so thank you for calling in.
Listen, you have to talk a little bit about the Jonah Hex. I mean, fantastic. Yeah. And why didn't you continue with them? And why were you involved with the movie? I'll give you a few.
No.
One time.
Please. Well, okay. Let me jump off on that. When I was growing up, and I guess I was, you know, a teenager, probably early 70s is when Jonah Hex came out. And
right,
I started picking those up.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere in there, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
right around there.
And I started reading those, and, you know, I loved them because they had all of my loves in them. They were Western. They were a little bit offbeat. And they were very much like the Clint Eastwood films that I had grown up on in the 60s, which were the Sergio Leone films that kind of revolutionized the way Westerns were done. And, of course, things have moved on since then, too. And some of those look fairly crude comparatively. But they were a breath of fresh air at that time. So I had those influences going into it, which I'm sure that John Albano, who invented Hex, was also influenced by those kinds of spaghetti Westerns. And so I read those, and I loved them. And then years later, Tim Truman, who I didn't know at that time, somebody said, you know, he draws like you write. And I thought, well, that's cool. And so DC contacted me and said, you know, would you like to work for us? And at that time, it was actually on another comic that did come out called Blood and Shadows. But it took so long for the artist to finish the work he was doing, that comic kind of got lost in the woods. But in the meantime, they said, would you like to work with Tim Truman and, you know, do Jonah Hex? Do you know Jonah Hex? I said, oh, yeah, I love Jonah Hex. Well, the truth of the matter was I actually remembered the Hex comics as having supernatural elements and horror elements, and they didn't for the most part. But that's how I remembered them. And I think it was because they seemed so strange and different to me when I first read them that by the time the 90s rolled around, I had added all kinds of things to them in my head. I'd already written some weird Western material. This was before it was the rave that it is now. I was, you know, I did Dead in the West and some things like that. And I said, well, you know, this is great. There's my opportunity. And they gave us a kind of chance to reinvent it. And I put Jonah Hex as an East Texan. And I took it from the standpoint that there was something weird going on, and I made it grittier. And, of course, Tim's artwork was just magnificent. And so we did the first series that we did called Two Gun Mojo, which kind of changed a lot of the way people saw that character for a long time. And then we did two other sets of series on it. And we got into a lawsuit for the second one, which was called Riders of the Worm and such, with the Winter Brothers, because we had Johnny and Edgar Autumn. And they were drawn like the Winter Brothers to some extent, but they were meant to be a play on their persona, not on them. I mean, the idea that they actually lived underground and ate pig brains and that they were part worm is pretty ridiculous for somebody to get upset about, but they did. But we had satirized everything else in there, all kinds of things. Tim even has himself in there, crap in his pants. He draws himself in. So it was obviously a broad satire, where the first one was a much more serious sort of horror one. And so that kind of put a spoil on us. We did come back and we did Shadows West, but they curtailed it by an issue that we thought we were going to have. And so though it came out pretty good, it didn't come out as well as we would have liked. So I think on Jonah Hex, at least for some time, we were persona non grata. And also, I think, too, that neither one of us wanted a monthly comic. And then in the meantime, later on, I went to work for the Batman the Animated Series, and they had one episode that had Jonah Hex idea
right.
that they had
That's,
in it.
Yeah, right.
They gave me this idea, and they said, can you develop this into a story, a script? And I did. And it was great fun. It was Jonah Hex as an older guy. And then later, I came back and wrote a Jonah Hex short that's on the sort of DC collection of, I guess, what we used to call short shorts, you know, which were short films about particular characters. And it was also on the Blu-ray version of Under the Red Hood. And a lot of people compared it, not compared it, but said that, because the movie came out at the same time, they said, this is better than the movie, and it's only 12 minutes. So I don't know. I never saw
right.
the movie. But the original movie was based on Two Gun Mojo, and the screenwriters wrote an adaptation, which I liked, based on that. But then they got fired, and somebody else came in, and then it became what it became. And like I say, I haven't seen it, so I don't really have an opinion on it.
Right. But will it ever be revived, or is it pretty much dead in the water, Jonah Hex?
You mean for me?
Yeah, for you.
I don't know that it's dead in the water. I mean, a lot of things have changed now. We won the lawsuit. You know, the lawsuit
right.
went on for like 7 years, and
wow.
the final judge,
yeah.
they threw it out. I mean, it was obviously satire. And, you know, it was sort of like trying to sue Saturday Night Live for making fun of somebody. And
right.
it just didn't make much sense because it was so obviously that. You know, I had some of their fans go, how could you do this to them? I said, look, you know, I've been satirized in things, and I have. And that's fine. That's what people do. I actually thought they were pretty funny. And my take was is that if this is offending you that deeply, then you really need to, you know, stand back, take a look at yourself, because this isn't you. This is some persona that's being satirized, like Elvis Presley or you know, somebody that's well known. You know, I did Bubba Hotep, and that's a loving tribute to Elvis, but it's also got a lot of things in there that are just human, that keep him from being a god and make him more of a human, and at least this guy who believes he's Elvis and might be. And so those kind of things, I think, are different. You know, you're satirizing more of a stage persona than you are the actual person.
Right, right. No, they're some of my all-time favorites, honestly. I mean,
thank you. Thank
the graphic
you.
Novels you did, and you know, to me, they remind me a little bit of the books Edge by George
Gilman.
You know,
I read those.
Loved the books.
Yeah, I forget the writer's real name was Terry Hartnett. That's what it was.
There you go. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a British writer, and at that
Correct.
Era, there were a series, this was in the 80s, there was Fargo, I don't know if you remember Fargo.
Yes,
Fargo
yeah.
wasn't as graphic, but it was a very realistic Western that obviously was influenced by the film The Professionals, and there were
right.
a whole series of these kind of things that eventually led to what they begin to call the adult Western, which were really sex Westerns. Probably the
mm-hmm.
very first of those that fit that pattern was written by Brian Garfield and was called Sliphammer. And then
right,
that
right.
gradually became a genre unto itself, and it sometimes mated with the more graphic aspects. There was this whole Gladiator series like that. There was the Western series like that. I think they tried some science fiction. I mean, these things had
they
been done in
did.
More underground. What's that?
Yeah, I know of some of those. There's one in particular by Charles Platt called The Gas, or just Gas.
Yes. Yes, that's it. Yeah, and so there was some of that, you know, but most of the ones before that had all been very underground or very much a part of the pornographic, you know, books that you would buy mail order or you'd buy at a truck stop or something. But this became like a major thing, and the adult Western went on for, you know, quite some time, and a lot of people were, you know, writing adult Westerns and made their living. Like one of my favorite writers, Neil Barrett, who wrote great science fiction and fantasy and things, but he wrote a ton of those things to pay the bills and make a living.
Mm.
You know, that's the one thing, Joe. You know, I mean, people get, you know, get compartmentalized. You know, you're this type of writer or you're that type of writer. And, of course, you know, I got to know you through horror, but you're, you know, most writers do so much more than that. You know, and
yeah,
and one thing, it's why
when people label you, it's the, you know, I'm never bothered if somebody says, oh, he's a horror writer, you know, he writes horror, but I don't really want to just be a horror writer or a crime writer, not because it's inaccurate with some items, but because it's inaccurate across the board. So when someone says that, it sort of forgets that I've also written all these other things.
Right, and that's what I was going to try to say for our listeners. That you know, you may know Joe from Half as Leonard. You may know Joe from, you know, Bubba Hotep or these things, you know, as a horror writer. But there's so much more out there that you can explore for all these writers. And I think that's an important thing to say.
Well, yeah, you know, and I've written a wide variety. I mean, even in crime, I've been like my novel, The Bottoms, which is probably my most popular novel and certainly just continues to do really, really well. And, you know, I wrote Paradise Sky, which is a huge Western historical, which for me personally is my favorite of my books. The Thicket, The Edge of Dark Water, Sunset and Sawdust. All of those are of a different nature. And, the Bottoms is one that I am also fond of because we tried to make a film out of it, and Bill Paxton was supposed to direct it. And we had a script by Brent Hanley, who wrote the script for Frailty, which Bill had directed. And, of course, Bill had to go in the hospital and, died after surgery. But, that one I'm close to just because, you know, Bill and I were friends, and I liked what he wanted to do. And so that was a terrible disappointment. But anytime I see that book or pick it up, I not only think of that book, but I think of, you know, the connection with Bill. And, you know, there's been some new interest in it. And just lately I've been able to sort of think about anybody else doing it, you know, because Bill had that worked out. We talked about it, worked on it, I guess, about 8 years with Brent Hanley doing the script. And then, you know, we got sidelined. But those things that are like that are so different than, say, Happ and Leonard, are so different from Bubba Hotep. And then there's, you know, I have a fantasy series about a brain-enhanced seal, Ned the Seal, that are done by Subterranean Books. So, yeah, you've got to have a lot of interest in this. At least I have to have a lot of interest if I want to get up in the morning and sit down behind that word processor and have fun. And that's what I do.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, Mike does some writing, and I have, and I'll tell you, I'm not a writer. I could talk on a podcast, but I'm not a writer. I give you guys a lot of credit because that's a lot of work.
Don't even put me in the category with this man. I'm telling you, I'm minor league.
No, I'm you're a writer, Mike. Okay.
Hey, you're doing
that's
it, man.
All.
You're doing it.
Yeah,
you're doing
I'm going,
it.
And, yeah. Well, and you know. You do a lot of Westerns. I know you talked a little bit about like the spaghetti. Was that something you grew up with? I mean, I guess everybody coming from our era and before that, you know, were affected by Westerns in some way or another because they were prolific.
Well, basically,
television.
Well, you know,
and film.
The other thing too, when I was a kid, Westerns, like you said, they were everywhere. They were not only films, TV was full of them. And there were Western novels everywhere. But my father was born in 1909, and that just missed that Western era, but there was a lot of Western element to our country up and in the 30s, up to about 1930s. In 1920s, even the gangsters were just an extension of the old West in many ways. And so it wasn't that far removed from when I was born, and certainly wasn't that far removed from when my father grew up. My mother was a little younger than him, but they had gone through the Great Depression, which has also been a source of many of my novels. But my dad told me a lot of old stories that had been told him about, you know, characters, Billy the Kid, Jesse James, some of them legendary, some of them folklore, some of them told for the truth. And all of that stuff was, you know, constantly bombarding me. But strangely enough, except for a little odd and end here and there, I didn't read Western fiction. And I loved the movies. I never thought about writing it at all. But when I started trying to write professionally, I started reading more broadly. I read everything. You know, I read everything from, and I still do, Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and I would read Brian Garfield, and I would read Ray Bradbury, and I would read Edgar Rice Burroughs, you know. I would read Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett and James Cain, all of these different things. And so one of the things that I read was popular Westerns, because there was a whole market for them then. And I thought, well, there's all these different kinds of things out there, paperbacks. And I wanted, at that time, all I had in mind was like the Beatles song. I wanted to be a paperback writer. And so I started reading Westerns and thinking, wow, I really like these. Same way with crime. And I had grown up on them in films, but science fiction and fantasy and horror were the only things that as a child and as a teenager and as a young man that I'd actually thought that I might ever write. And I discovered that my interests were broader than I thought, and they were constantly expanded by reading outside of my comfort zone, which now my comfort zone's a lot different. It's a lot bigger. My wheelhouse is a lot different. But Westerns were one of those things, and I actually became a fanatic for them, and I began to read a lot of Western history. And so all of those things, you know, influenced me. When I wrote Jonah Hex, I had, you know, not only the fantasy aspects of it or the horror aspects of it, I actually had true love from Western films and TV and books and, you know, nonfiction books and histories.
Let me, one thing I have to run by you real quick here is,
sure,
I've read a quote, okay, that it, your quote where you said something along the lines of when you write that everything, that when you write you want everything to be alive. Can you talk a little bit about that? That's interesting to me, because I love Japanese culture, cinema, and that to me sounds a lot like, you know, the Japanese, you know, the Zen.
Well, you know,
folklore.
That's smart. But you know, I would think that's part of the influence, but I would say Native American influence from, like, the Manitou and how they thought of everything as alive. There's a tremendous connection, actually, between Japanese and Native American culture in some ways, and I guess that comes out of the warrior aspects, but there's also that other part of it, which is the beauty of things, that the Japanese would do poetry, they would do flower arranging, but I probably learned that more from Ray Bradbury than anybody else from a particular writer, but from reading about Native American mythology and their culture, that idea of a Manitou is everything, including a rock, has a spirit. Now, whether it does or not is immaterial. But as a writer, if you think that way, when you write, your prose is much more lively. It doesn't mean you have to have a rock walking around. There's so many people that take everything absolutely literal. You can do that. I actually wrote a story called Down by the Sea Near the Great Big Rock, where the rock was alive, and it may have been more than a rock. But all of those ideas come from that idea of visualizing everything as alive. Everything then has a color. It has a feel to it. And when you sit down to write, whether it's intentional or not, those aspects will come from the writing. Now, if you write like everything you're writing about is alive, as a writer yourself, you have to write like everybody you know is dead, because then you're not having your agent looking over your shoulder, your editor looking over your shoulder, your parents looking over your shoulder, your wife looking over your shoulder, your best friend looking over your shoulder, etc. And you don't, because you never really know what your audience is. There are some writers who I think are better at picking the audience and understanding them. I'm not that way. I have no idea, because people are so varied. And I know I'm very varied in what I like, so I know that there's only one audience that I understand and that I can please, and that's me. Now, not to be misunderstood, is that when I finish, I hope like hell that there are a lot of people out there that like it, but I feel that I'm more likely to achieve that by not writing for somebody other than myself, because I like to think there are probably readers out there that would like to see what it is I would like to see.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that brings up something, too, that I was going to ask, and Mike actually focused on a little bit. But when you write and you develop a character, do you, you know, think of, like, who might be playing that character or, you know, who has influenced that character as you develop it, you know, like Happ and Leonard or any character that you do? Do you visualize a specific person being that character or anything like that?
No, the short answer is no. When I'm writing, the characters are the characters in my head. You know, Happ is very much like me. There's no doubt about that. He's probably a little better looking than me, but I'm a little smarter than he is. And the way I see it is that I've borrowed a lot of stuff in my life. I was a Vietnam War resister. I dropped out of college to be drafted. I was drafted. I was supposed to go to prison, but they gave me a 1Y, which means unfit for military service. I think they threw me a bone because the war was winding down. So a lot of things in Happ's life, I worked the jobs he and Leonard worked. I worked in the rose fields. You know, I did bouncing. I've done all those things that Happ and Leonard – well, not all, but most of the things that Happ and Leonard do – in the general sense. I mean, obviously I haven't gone out and had their kinds of adventures with, you know, having to, you know, have a gunfight or a fist fight with, you know, terrible people who are going to kill me, but I have had real fights. And I grew up in a town that when I was young, that was just kind of rough. And, you know, I'm not trying to play like it was West Side Story with gangs, you know, snapping their fingers and all that, but there was a lot of stuff that was just stupid macho fights. And then I've been a martial artist for 55 years, and even though I'm a little long in the tooth, I still teach. And as my students will tell you, I am still spry. So when I write about those characters of mine, I know somewhat of what I speak. My system, myself, I've been recognized the International Martial Arts Hall of Fame, the United States Martial Arts Hall of Fame. You know, so I've lived in the country and done the jobs they've done, driven the cars they've driven, and so on and so on. So to me, when I sit down to write about them, I'm writing in many ways about my own past, or at least elements of it. I'm not trying to, you know, tell you that it's autobiography, because it is not. But it's certainly influenced by my own life, my own experience, and the experience of people close to me.
I've got
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead, Mike, because I was just going to say everybody gets around here, one more round around the corner. So go ahead, Mike. Got any
just
more
real
questions?
Quick here. You know, when I was young, I used to love baseball. You know, this is as close as I can possibly get to explaining this question. But, you know, as I had a baseball game that I used to play. So as I played this baseball game, in my mind, these players came alive, okay, because I was, you know, I was inventing this game. I made this game. Do you have that when you're inventing these characters or after you've already are they alive in your mind?
Absolutely.
You know what
I compartmentalize. There are probably the characters that to me are just like people I feel like are next door or Happ and Leonard. I feel that way, you know. And most of these characters are alive, or there's something about them that just seems very real to me, is that on some morning I might get up and it might be misty and I might go outside and I might blink and find myself in their universe instead of them in mine, you know. And it's just, I think that's part of it. I think it's one of the differences I can find so much when I'm reading a book and I can tell the author is just, you know, working to pound this thing out and trying to get every line just right, but they have no feel for the characters. They have no feel for the story. And there's a difference in a story and a plot. They often can overlap and you can be good at both, but generally there's a difference in a storyteller and a plotter, and I'm more the storyteller. And so for me, I think that storytellers tend to be more about feeling those characters as if they're alive.
Right.
I agree with that 100%. Doc, do you have anything to add? Any other questions?
Let me take a look here. I get to do. Yes. Bubba Nosferatu, Curse of the Shiva Empires. Is that being worked on now or
no?
For the no. Movie adaptation?
They Bruce didn't like their script, and he said he would probably do something if I did it, but both of us just frankly aged out in a way. I wrote a book called Bubba and the Cosmic Bloodsuckers, which is a prequel to Bubba Hotep. It's sold out. It's coming out now in paper. If you get interested, it's also collected with Bubba Hotep, and it's out now. It's called Bubba Hotep, and it's just called Bubba and the Cosmic Bloodsuckers, and that's the same comic that's now out from IDW, because they did it in 5 issues, and it is now collected. And, you know, either one of those or both, I think, are really good entertainment. They'd have made a nice movie, but I just don't think they were the movie that we could have made. I think Bruce was older than the Elvis in the prequel, because it goes back to him being younger. And there was a period in time where I think he could have played that quite easily. But, you know, I think he's moving on, too. He's doing the Ripley's Believe It or Not now. You know, there's and I just think the world of Bruce. He's a stand-up guy. And Don Coscarelli, you know, I love working with Don, would like to work again. But I also think, how many goddamn sequels and prequels do we need, you know? I've certainly done a little bit of that, but I don't want to, you know, live my life on that. Let's do something new.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Do you have any more plans of working with IDW? Because I absolutely love them as a publishing company.
I hope so. My son and I did an X-Files, 2-part X-Files comic for them. And I think it was maybe the last X-Files comics they published, so we killed it. But anyway, we did 2 episodes that I think it's really fun. Got great response from the readers, and I'm glad of that. But we wrote something in that old original X-Files vein, meaning when it first started, when it had these sort of monster moments, and that's what we did. And we had a lot of fun doing it. And it was fun because we went back and we watched a lot of the old X-Files, and in one of them, there was Jonathan Levitt played as this magician, because he really is a magician, but he's also my daughter's boyfriend, so that was really cool to see him in there. I thought, oh, that's cool, you know. So that was our X-Files trivia. My daughter is a singer and songwriter, as well as she does some acting and writing. She was actually in the Happ and Leonard series in a small background role where she was a singer at a carnival, and they used her music in the episode, although you don't hear it as much because there's a lot of action and stuff going on. And she had music in Cold in July. And my son, you know, writes screenplays and comics. He's just starting to direct a film. In fact, I'm supposed to direct one before too long if everything goes well. So, you know, it's writing and all this has been so good to me because it's expanded constantly, and I'm doing different things. There's nothing I prefer more than sitting down and writing stories, but it's also given me the opportunity to travel the world. It's given me the opportunity to get involved in other interests of mine, like comics and like film. So, you know, every day when I get up and my feet hit the floor, I'm in one excited son of a bitch. I can't wait.
Awesome.
Now,
thank you so much.
For me, I just have to bring this up because when we had you back on the podcast at KSDAD with Stephen Ronquillo, you and I got into a little sidebar about food. And I don't know if you remember that, but you gave me this wonderful recipe.
Was that with the eggs?
Yeah. The huevos, what I call them now is the huevos Lansdale. You now have, you know, just, you know, the thing is, people, you know, are you a foodie?
I do like to cook, but I can't claim I cook all the time. I don't. And it's partly because I'm so busy and whatever. My wife doesn't cook at all. She hates cooking. She's a terrible cook, and she'll tell you that. And So I sometimes cook, and but a lot of times we eat simply, and then we eat out quite a bit. My wife says that what she likes to make is reservations, and I understand that. But mostly we have good restaurants, not fast food, but good restaurants we like to go to maybe a couple times a week, and then we eat simply at home, and then I do cook once in a while. My daughter came in, and I made an Indian dish, and that was, a lot of fun to do. But I would rather spend a lot of the time that cooking. I spend it reading. I spend it doing martial arts. I spend it watching films. I spend it watching television. All the things I love, I'm living that life. And when I was a kid, I thought, wouldn't it be cool if, and now I look back and I go, wow, I actually got what I wanted. I'm a very lucky person. Yeah, and, I travel a lot. We go places. We know a lot of people. I've got to meet so many interesting and in some cases unusual people in this. I in Italy, I'm really popular over there. So, I have free trips to Italy just about every year, and Germany and France from time to time, and Britain. Plus, we can afford to travel on our own. I don't claim to be rich, but I won't lie to you. I'm well off. I'm not the sort of person that needs to quit working, but I probably, could. I just don't want to. I love what I do. I love the way people react to it and love it. That's great. Like I say, I write for myself, but I always hope after I've done it that I get that response. But if I've done something I really love and I don't, I'm good with that. And so it's a wonderful way to get up every morning. It's a wonderful way to live. I'm sitting here in my study right now, and there are rows and rows of bookshelves packed with books, fiction, nonfiction, you name it, picture books, art books. I've got a giant television screen over here. I've got stacks of, DVDs, plus I've got, these different channels and things like that. So I can do those things, and then I can go out and do the physical things. I can do the travel, and my wife and I, we have a great life because I work only about 3 hours a day. And, usually I have a deal. I get 3 to 5 pages a day, and if I get more than that, it's usually 7 or 10. But this novel I've been working on, I got 40 pages in 3 hours today. Now, those pages are a lot of dialogue, and, they're not a certain word count for each page. It's just whatever it fills up. But that's insane. I mean, that hardly ever happens. Yesterday I got 37. Day before that I got 20. But the beauty is I don't even remember doing it. I just got up and I sat down. I also type extremely fast, and I'm pretty much on the money when I do it because I've been doing it so long. It's not to say that I don't make changes, but I'm not a multiple draft person. I usually revise as I go. I wrote so many pages today, I didn't. I'll probably revise part of that tomorrow, but skip on over and go continue where I left off, and then till I get to the point where I'm completely caught up. And I'm shocked. And then I have another novel going at the same time. I haven't worked on it in the last few days, and I wrote an article, and all of that I do in 3 hours. Because it is the greatest gift that has been given to me was with what limited amount of talent I have. I have tried to do the best with it that I can.
Limited?
And as I,
limited? Are you freaking kidding me?
Well, it's funny, at least for me, I always, like I told you, I just wanted to be a paperback writer. And at that time, it was possible to make a living writing paperbacks like Philip K. Dick and Philip Jose Farmer and all these people were doing, but you had to write a bunch of them. And when I got into it, I became more ambitious than that. And as I continued to write, I began to think I had a little more talent than I expected, and I had a little bit more originality than I had thought. And so I was able to start finding different ways of doing things to the point to not only where I got to where I was making a living, then suddenly I was making a good living. Then my wife quit her job and went to work for me. And then the kids grew up and actually went into similar, branches of what I do. And I never expected that. So it's great because we're also writing things together and we are working on things together. So, I can't imagine, at least for me, a better life than the one that I thought of when I was a child, including martial arts, which I got into when I was 11. My father was a boxer and a wrestler, so I actually started there, but then I moved over into different forms of the martial arts. And so it's sort of like, you know, when you're a kid, and if I had written down what I wanted and put it in an envelope and I opened it now, it would be exactly what I wanted.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
You know, so awesome. Respect. You also seem to have a real appreciation of, you know, what's been given you, and as I like to say, the small pleasures. That's where I was going with cooking. For me, cooking is something I love to
do. I get that. I could easily see myself in another universe, that being more of a thing with me. And it's also, you know, I'm very much a fan of archaeology and anthropology, so I do a lot of, you know, reading and research there. I've been on a few dig sites, at least being on the sites, and I do that, but I don't. I was, and at one time when I was going to college, I thought I would get a degree in anthropology and archaeology and that I would write on the side. But I began to realize that anthropology and archaeology, as much as I love them, were more a hobby. And it's the same way with cooking. I love to cook, and when I have those moments, I love to do it. And in fact, there's going to be a short story collection coming out that I'm working on this year, comes out next year, that my daughter's doing recipes from the Happ and Leonard short stories. And so it will
be. Okay, I need to get that book.
It's called. It's called Of Mice and Minestrone.
What's it called again?
Of Mice and Minestrone.
You're
you remember that?
I love them. But what I was going to say is Joe gave me this wonderful recipe that's so simple. And so wonderful, and we've actually PM'd a little bit, like I'll add something and that
sure.
sort of thing to it. But basically, it's just, you know, eggs that you fry up. You put on cheese on top of the eggs and then some salsa. You cover it. You let the eggs, whatever you want to cook them as, soft-boiled or, you know, over easy or over medium or over hard, and you have a meal. And it's a wonderful
thing. Nothing.
Thing.
It's one of those things that you can tell somebody to go, oh, that's it. And then when they cook it, they go, hell, that's great. What I like to do is put, like, you know, butter spray. I use the non-calorie spray because I'm an old guy and I got to, you know, watch all that. But I put that in there, and then I put those eggs. I just crack them. I do them sunny side up. And just when they're about ready, I put cheese on top. And then it melts in. Then I flip it and put cheese on the bottom and let it go just a little bit more, because that cheese will melt faster, because I actually cook the eggs faster than is recommended. Used to, when I used to cook, like, sunny side up eggs, I slowed it down, and you know, you popped a little of the grease on top of it and all that. But these I actually cook a little faster. And I don't know what it is, but by adding the cheese, and then I like to put different kinds of salsas or chilies with it. But and then I always think jalapenos with it are just absolutely wonderful. But for me, that's the simplicity of that. And you can do it quickly, and it's a real meal.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the way I am, too. That's why I just so connected with that. But a mice and minestrone, I'm writing that down right now.
It comes out 2020.
Awesome.
Yeah,
so,
this
so
year
tell
I've
us got, what
you've
got.
Other things. Yeah, okay, I was going to say, I've got this year I've got The Elephant of Surprise, which is coming out in March. That's something that Happ and Leonard often say. We're going to use the elephant of surprise. And so that's kind of based on what they say. So I have that. I have a novel that is the end of the trilogy of the Ned the Seal books, which they're not particularly well known. I do them for a small press, but they have their dedicated fans. And this is the first one in good grief. It's been maybe 15 years or more since I wrote the first two. But they're not cliffhanger books. They all stand by themselves. But it's coming out pretty soon, and it's called The Sky Done Ripped. So The Sky Done Ripped and The Elephant of Surprise are coming out this year. I probably have something else that I haven't thought of. Oh, there is a big collection of my crime stories that goes with the science fiction fantasy thing I was telling you about. There's cosmic interruptions, but this is called Blood in the Gears, and it's my some of my crime and mystery stories that have been collected. Huge collection, like the science fiction collection. Next year, there's a horror collection called Wet Juju, and then the year after that, there will be a big collection that's unnamed of the more gothic, East Texas gothic type stories. And then next year, there's the novel I'm doing now, which I won't talk about, but it'll come out from Little Brown Mulholland. And I have a new book coming out from Subterranean then called Jane Goes North, which is just about two women on a road trip that kind of goes wrong. And so, you know, I got so many things I can't even remember them, you know. But that's a good thing. That's a wonderful thing. And then there's something coming on Netflix that has I won't say many more about it. There's a show coming on Netflix that has two of my stories that have been adapted for that.
Nice.
Very cool.
Nice. Well, you know, for everyone, you know, just keep your eyes and ears open for what Joe does, because it's coming, I can tell you that.
yeah.
Joe, I want to thank you for coming on. I don't want to
thank
keep
you.
But really, it's always a pleasure. I'll drop an email to you or a message to you, you know, and thank you that way. Just to finish it up, Doc and Mike, do you have any final things you want to say to Joe before we let him go?
It's been an honor, I'll tell you. Really, it has been.
Thank you,
know,
sir.
If this opportunity ever arises again, I would love to be part of this, because I would love to hear the story about Red Range.
Okay, yeah.
That
well, there is a story.
I would
and
love
also,
to hear.
One quick piece is that it's being continued by my son. Pirates of Fireworld is coming out, and that's got art by Jock and some other artists. But from what I've seen, it should be just gorgeous, and I've read my son's script. It's a lot of fun. It's a little bit more in the tradition of, say, Edgar Rice Burroughs and Jules Verne and pirate novels and stuff like that. So it's a four-part series, of which this first part is coming out pretty soon.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yes.
Doc, any final words for Joe?
Yes. Thank you so much for coming onto our show, and thank you for doing everything that you do. And seriously,
well, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
You're
I always
so
appreciate
welcome.
It.
Joe, I got to say, it's a true pleasure, and I really do thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
We wish you the best. Though I don't think you really need our wishes, because you're kicking ass, buddy.
Wow, yeah, absolutely.
I always need them. You know, I always feel like the luckiest guy in the world, you know. But I also know I've worked hard for it, and I'm proud of that. But I'm also glad that other people have been kind enough to buy my books and to buy my stories and watch the things that I've written that have been script or based on my work. And I've always told people, I've had people that I've met that I don't want to sign autographs. I say, you know, those are the people that put beans on your table. Those are the people that, because they exist, you have the opportunity to do this. Because if you don't have readers or viewers or whatever the particular medium that your work is being expressed in, you got nothing. So I'm always proud to talk to people, and I'm always pleased that people care. So thank y'all.
Well, thank you again, and just want to say thanks for listening. Why don't you tell us what's going on, Doc, in the next couple of days? We're kind of busy here at the Legion.
We have a busy, busy week this week because the Sludge Pit didn't have a show Sunday due to everybody being sick, and Danae wasn't able to make it to the show, but in general, she's good. So just want to clear that up. We're going to be having a show tomorrow, which is like a combination of the Sludge Pit, Carl's Cavern, and Doc Sludge's Toxic Cinema. We're going to be having a little combo of everything, several reviews, and several reviews, a memorial to someone who just passed.
Bruno Gunn.
And
Bruno Gunn.
Yes. And we are going to be talking about humor in writing. Basically like Mad Magazine, Playboy, Cracked, that type of awesome stuff. humor and literature, basically. And on Wednesday, we're going to have a special edition of the Sludge Pit with Joel D. Weinkoop. He's going to be coming in.
Nice.
I know we're having a show. Christoph is having a show Thursday. I'm not really sure what the subject is. Then did you have one scheduled for Friday, Carl?
Oh, absolutely. On Friday, this coming Friday, we have my friend Rob Schmidt coming in. Rob directed the original Wrong Turn movie. He's got a number of new projects out. He also teaches a film down in, I think it's Arkansas, if I'm not mistaken. But he's going to be coming in on Friday, and that'll be a lot of fun, too. Rob's a really good guy. So please join us for that. And that's a busy week, my friends.
It is.
All right, well, for everyone, and go ahead.
Sunday is to be announced, so we'll get there for what's going on Sunday. So, all right. Oh, sorry about that.
So anyway, okay, cool. So for everyone listening, we thank you for listening. Again, we want to thank Joe for coming on. It was wonderful and just great to have him here. Mike, as always, you are in the house. And you are
thank
always
you for inviting
here,
me. Thank you.
Are you kidding? Of course. And of course, Doc, you're the best producer I know of. Of course, I only know one, but that's besides the point. No, I know two, actually. All right. And again, thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you tomorrow. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Sounds great. Good night, everybody.